Excellent. Thank you. Thanks to everyone for coming, and thanks to our online audience as well. My name is Carrie Page, and I'm the Community Engagement Manager for Next Generation Learning Challenges. And I'm very excited to be at the podium today to introduce you to two of the projects that we have funded recently, and to have them, I'm really not going to spend much time up here because I want to cede the floor to them to tell you about some of the work they're doing. But before we get started, I wanted to provide just a quick introduction to NGLC. If you've never heard of us before, you can find us on the web at nextgenlearning.org, or we have a space in the exhibit hall called NGLC Alley. But we're a collaborative initiative. We were started in 2010 when a bunch of organizations were brought together, including EDUCAUSE, the League for Innovation in the Community College, the International Association for K-12 Online Learning, and the Council of Chief State School Officers. And we're funded by the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. And we came together to start a new initiative that will be focused on improving college readiness and completion through using technology for technology-enabled innovation. And the way we do that, we do a variety of different things. We create resources, we create events, but the most significant thing that we do is we fund innovation. And we fund that in waves. Wave one, focused on scaling innovations in blended learning, deeper learning, learner analytics, and open core courseware. And many of our wave one grantees are just finishing up their grant period now. Our next wave focused on K-12 and creating interactive online modules to help students really advance their understanding both in deeper learning and of the Common Core standards. And most recently, and you can meet these folks tomorrow afternoon, we funded a variety of blended school developers and in higher ed, what we're calling breakthrough models, so new higher ed programs that really throw away things like seat time, and they really focus on anytime, anywhere, competency-based learning, and rethinking the tuition model. And so this is a quick map of all of our grants to date. One of the things that's unique about NGLC is that we're not focused on sort of having 1,000 flowers bloom, although it sort of looks like that when you look at that map there. We're really focused on scaling innovation because we believe one of the critical challenges we face in higher education is sort of breaking down the concept of not invented here. We all sort of think we each have to have our own learner analytics solution, or we each have to have our own blended learning strategy. And we're focused on funding people who are doing this well so that they can expand their best practices to other places. Which brings me to our two speakers today, Alexandra Pickett, who's the Associate Director of the SUNY Learning Network, which is part of the SUNY system, and Tom Cavanaugh, who's the Assistant Vice President of Distributed Learning at the University of Central Florida. And I'm going to turn it over to them to talk about how they're taking blended learning and course transformation, and not doing it for a single course or in a single classroom, but really doing it at scale to expand that to more people. So, Alex, over to you.
Hi, everybody. Thanks, Carrie and NGLC for inviting me to come to EDUCAUSE and to do this panel presentation. I'm really happy to be here also to talk about my NGLC-funded project. And I work at the system level at SUNY, at State University of New York, in the SUNY Learning Network. And the SUNY Learning Network is an organization, a system-wide organization under the Office of the Provost that assists SUNY campuses with system-wide support for faculty development, instructional design, in the entire continuum from web-enhanced all the way to fully online teaching and learning, and provides help desk and application support and marketing. And we do that at the system level, working right now with about 40 SUNY campuses. So it was a good spot for us to put this NGLC project because of our relationships with all the SUNY campuses. And 600 people applied for the awards, and 29 were funded, and we were one of the 29. I was very excited to have the opportunity to fund the project, which was under the challenge of blended learning, to try and help put a frame around blended learning at the system level and to focus on some of the challenges and barriers to success, persistence, and completion that we see in our students, particularly at the community college. And so, to frame this project a little bit, this project is about student success, persistence, and completion in a really powerful context, the goal being to address the issue of poverty in the state of New York. And really, the age and gender and education are really strong predictors of poverty status, as we may all know nationally. About 40% of the poor are children. That is, 1 in 5 children in the USA are poor. And New York State is one of the 13 states in the US with the highest percentage of children living in poverty. And 20% of the children in New York State live in poverty. And single families comprise 39% of the poor. And we all know that poverty of the family has consequences for the education of the children in terms of achievement and graduation rates and employment and ultimately in salary. And this cycle of poverty is something from which it is very difficult to escape. And so what that means is that the reality in New York State is if you're born poor, you will die poor. And if you have children, they will also be poor and die poor. Which is powerful and sobering and really something that in the writing of this grant motivated me strongly to try and as the largest state public university system in the country, to try and figure out ways that we could, from the education perspective, which is just one of the ways to address this issue, that we could put some interventions in place, some processes or systems in place to begin to try and understand the issue better from a research perspective, and then to try and innovate and put practices into place that might be able to help us address some of these issues. So we do know that education can disrupt the cycle of poverty and this intergenerational transmission of poverty, and that people with higher levels of educational attainment are those who have higher incidence of exiting poverty. My slides are not in order, sorry. I'm not quite sure. The thing is, in the college opportunities for New York State residents are really poor, according to some of the research that I pulled together in the writing of this proposal. And so I found that the likelihood of enrolling in college by age 19 was only fair and very low percentage of working age adults. 4 in 100 are enrolled in higher education. And for disadvantaged populations, those percentages are even ridiculously lower. In writing this up, I've realized that what we need to do is really help the students catch up so that they can complete their education and earn themselves a credential that can get them a job that will improve their chances for them and for their children to escape poverty. But that's not the only problem. For those of us who work at the community college level, we know that up to 50% of the students coming in, and that number may be up to 70% in some cases, are not ready for college level work. And of those students who come in, they need developmental studies in either math or in English. And of that percentage that test into these developmental programs, 50% fail. And so in thinking about this, this is a huge barrier to persistent success and completion, relegating those people, to essentially to lives of poverty. And so it seems to me that New York State is failing to adequately meet the educational needs of the poor and working class families in New York State. So that's what this project is about. know why these are not in order. That's what this project is about. SUNY SLN Catch Up and Complete Enhanced Blended Learning Initiative, and every one of those words means something. And it really is very simple. And this was my logic model, actually, that I created for the proposal that I wrote. And as you can see, you know, the blue box there, we need to help people catch up with their developmental needs. And we focused on math to help them get into their chosen degree program so that they could get their credential, get a higher paying job, and thereby exit poverty. So I'm being a little facetious when I say, you know, it's simple. It's actually very complex, and there are a lot of barriers to success for these students. Our focus was on young 19 to 23-year-old single parents from disadvantaged populations who are also working. And, you know, that is kind of a typical community college student for us in many of our community colleges. And so to address the some of the barriers, one of them that we identified was convenience and flexibility. So to address that issue of making things more convenient and flexible for these students with all of these barriers, we developed blended learning degree program at two institutions, Finger Lakes Community College and Herkimer County Community College. And so the thinking being that we'd reduce the time that the student needs to be on the campus at a specific hour, we'd make it more flexible, convenient for the student, and address factors that, and those are factors that correlate with low persistence and also low engagement, and facilitate in some way some of their competing priorities, help them support you know, their ability to get their education with these other competing life priorities that they have. So to address the success in their developmental studies, we focused on developmental math. So we enhanced and blended developmental math at both of the institutions for the participating students and the students participating in the study. And we used a tool called Cognitive Tutor, another by Carnegie Learning, another NGLC grantee. To address the issue of higher textbook costs, we worked with faculty to incorporate digital content, books, and open course library courses to replace their textbook costs and to reduce the cost of textbooks to between $30 and $50 per course. To address the issue of student support, we incorporated a tool called Starfish, and this is a learning analytics and early warning system that provides automated student tracking, early alerts, and some scheduling and assessment tools. And we also used another tool called SNAP, which is a social networking analysis tool, which allows you very easily to run an analysis on a discussion, and it works in any course management system, and it's free. And it generates a 3D modeling of the interaction, so faculty and students can very easily see if they are in the locus of interaction in the discussion or not, and then take action if they see that they are actually peripheral to the online interaction and engagement that's going on. And then we also, to address the issue of providing social networking and support for these students who need it, we created the SLN Student Commons, which is an online learning commons for peer-to-peer interaction and networking, and also staffed with digital age librarians and learning concierges to proactively reach out and support and scaffold these students and help them develop some resilience and self-efficacy and cultivate student self-regulated learning strategies. So, you know, it was a ambitious project for the money and for the time, which Carrie knows. And we did implement this in two SUNY institutions, as I mentioned, Herkimer Community College, and this is the demographics of the students at Herkimer. And again, sorry, these slides are out of order. And these are the demographics of Finger Lakes Community College, our other partner in this. And you can see these are both community colleges in rural central upstate New York. And so far, We have we're in the middle of our second implementation semester, and so from spring 2012, 103 students went through the two degree programs that we developed. Finger Lakes has created sort of a spin-off of that degree program and has an accelerated degree program model, which you can go to with that URL. And all this presentation is already uploaded into the EDUCAUSE site, plus some links if you're interested in exploring any of this further. We have enhanced and blended to date 33 courses, trained 28 faculty, trained 12 staff, and created a campus, an online student commons that, in addition to the two project campuses, we now have incorporated four additional SUNY campuses that are participating in student commons area. Here are the URLs where I have stuff that I can share with you. And again, these links are actual clickable links on the EDUCAUSE site for this session, so you don't need to copy that down. But I invite you to go to our project wiki to see all of it's all transparent and up and online. You can see even our meeting notes. And you can go and check out our student commons and see the resources that we have there for students to support their development of student self-regulated learning strategies and our learning concierge live chat that we have. And then I also want to point you to the student success materials. That is a folder chock full, and it's sort of the first iteration of our work to develop materials to support student success, which will be turned into more interactive. Right now it's sort of static info that's presented, but I invite you to go and check it out and see what you think of it. These are just some quotes from a student and from one of our learning concierges and from one of our professors. The project so far has been very rewarding, very challenging, and very good. And we are in the process of collecting the last data from the project, and we'll be producing a report in the next year. I didn't talk about the research, but we did, as a component of this project, have initially an experimental design and ended up having to modify that into a kind of a quasi-experimental design. So we had an experimental group and a control group, and the ones in the experimental group got the treatment, so they got access to all the technical interventions, and the control group folks did not. And so we're collecting the data from that, and we'll be writing that report up, as I said, in the next year. So I think that's it for me.
Thank you, Alex.
That's one thing I've learned from Alex's presentation is I should probably put more pets in my slides. I don't have any. I'm sorry. No pets. But maybe next time. Next year, if you come back, I'll add some pets. Okay, everybody, get out a pencil or a pen or get your Twitter thumbs ready, because I'm going to give you a URL in a few slides that I expect everybody to write down. Okay? If there's one thing you're going to take away from this presentation, it'll be this URL. So stay tuned. That's my teaser. So I'm happy here to talk to you today about our project, which had this really catchy title of Expanding Blended Learning Through Tools and Campus Programs. But we think it was a lot more exciting than its title was. And the idea behind it was to take the way the University of Central Florida, where I work, does blended learning and scale it to 20 institutions that are part of the American Association of State Colleges and Universities network. That's a network of an association of 420 members. And so we identified a subset of that. We identified 20 who were sort of a coalition of the willing who could kind of get up and running, who had the right student demographics to meet NGLC's goals of under 26, low income, and we started with them. So we had these 20 schools distributed across 11 different states, which I think, Carrie, made us the largest scale Wave 1 grant. I don't know about the other waves. I have a hard time paying attention to our grant. But it was pretty big, and there were a lot of challenges inherent in managing a project across such a distributed group of participants. and I'm not going to talk about any of those challenges today. But I'll be happy to answer questions about them because I have a lot to say about them. So here's our partners. We had two different categories of partners. Those that we worked with individually, those are on the left, individual institutions. And then we had those who were part of statewide consortia. And we had three different state consortia. And each consortium had a lead institution that coordinated the activities of those states. And each institution got a piece of the funding so that they could pay for the costs of developing blended learning. And many of them used it in the form of stipends for faculty so that they could go through faculty development or they could create their course materials as an overload or something. And the individual institutions actually had a kind of a bigger slice of the pie than the ones who were part of the consortia. But there were advantages for the consortium schools in the ability to work together and to kind of share resources across their different states. So when I say scale the way UCF does blended learning, I'll share a few statistics that kind of explain what I mean by that. So at UCF, we've been examining and studying the efficacy of different online learning modalities for the 17 years or so that we've been doing this. And in that time, blended learning has always come out with the highest number of excellent ratings. And that's a consistent finding across the entire time we've been doing this. Followed closely by fully online and face-to-face, which are kind of in a statistical tie. And in any given term, those two might jockey for a position there, followed by our lecture capture courses. So you could say that's nice, they like it, but how did they do in those courses? And so we also track student success. And by success, we define that as a C or better. And under a C is not success. So why do we do it that way? You know, grades are kind of the best thing we have to look at. It's common across all schools and colleges and departments. And by declassifying it in that way, we kind of eliminate some of the variability between grading inflation or deflation between colleges and departments. So the College of Engineering would say to the College of Education, you guys give out too many high grades and you don't have rigor. And then the College of Education says to the College of Engineering, if you knew the first thing about teaching, maybe you would have better performing students. And so what we do is try to stay out of the middle of that and just declassify grades by saying a C or better. And then if you look at the results, and again, this is consistent over time. This is just a six-term spread. But blended learning always is best. Always. So we feel at UCF that we know a little bit about how to do this. And we've got some reasons behind it, including faculty development, assessment, and support, and some other things. Likewise, withdrawal rates. We don't experience the giant double-digit withdrawal rates in our online courses that I've heard some schools have. And our blended learning courses have the lowest withdrawal rates of any modalities that we offer as well. The students like it. The reddish kind of color here is blended, and the yellow is fully online. And then our faculty actually like teaching blended courses more than online courses, fully online courses. So that's sort of in a nutshell what I mean by UCF's model. So their management structure for this grant, it had me kind of as the PI, and then I worked with my colleague at ASCU, George Mahaffey, who kind of helped us coordinate the network of institutions while UCF sort of built the materials and managed the activities. But really, my goal as part of the management of the project was just to get the heck out of the way and let the people who knew what they were doing talk to each other. So as quickly as I could, I tried to get the disciplinary experts talking to the people out in the field in the same discipline. So I will talk in a moment about the courses that we developed as part of our materials. One of those was in composition. We had a disciplinary lead at UCF in charge of the composition course. And what we tried to do was connect her in a community of practice with the other 20 institutions' composition faculty so that they were talking about issues relative to teaching their courses online or in blended format without any mediation by me, who would just sort of get in the way. So we tried to structure this so that there was centralized control, but there was decentralized communication. So as I mentioned, composition. As part of this project, we built two different template courses, model courses, and they will be available to you in this URL that I mentioned will be soon coming up. And we built this template in a way so that it had maximum flexibility. If you want to use this template, you can download that kind of as a whole cloth in our prefix menu and upload that through an IMS package into your LMS today. Or if that doesn't quite suit your needs and you need to customize it, you can use it in an a la carte fashion. And you could import it and then customize it however you want, delete or add. Or you could also take an MS Word version of all the content and copy and paste it into your own learning management system and do whatever you want with it. It's all Creative Commons, and you're welcome to it. So we also developed a faculty development program for these folks to teach composition. And we taught that in an online format, naturally. And it was facilitated by faculty at UCF, a couple of different folks, actually, because we had several cohorts running. And this is what the faculty development training looked like. We did it in Blackboard's course sites because we needed something that was open and we couldn't authenticate everybody into UCF's student information system. That would have been a nightmare. So this was actually a really good solution for us. And then this is what the template looks like if you uploaded it into your system today. This also was built in course sites, but the IMS package is importable into pretty much any LMS. We also built an algebra course. So the two courses that we built were composition and algebra, where there is arguably the greatest need, especially given our demographics. And we did the same thing. We built sort of the flexible template of the prefix of the a la carte menu, and we had our coordinator talk to the faculty at the various schools, and we tried to have her provide training as well, customized training to the math faculty. And she actually went beyond just algebra, and she supported all math faculty. And she did that mostly because she just wanted to help. Patsy Moskal, who some of you may know from UCF, she was presenting here today and I believe is presenting again. She coordinated our assessment activities and worked with all of the schools to gather data. One of the challenges we encountered, I promised I wouldn't talk about challenges, but I can't help this one, is the fact that IRB coordination amongst these 20 schools was very inconsistent. Some schools were quite sophisticated in their ability to gather data, and others, not so much. Not all of them are research institutions. In fact, most of them are not. And so they don't have the kind of sophistication in their research setups. And Patsy became something of an IRB consultant to 20 different schools, which dominated a lot of her time. Okay, we're getting close to the URL. I'm going to tell you about the Blended Learning Toolkit. The Blended Learning Toolkit is a website that we built that houses a variety of resources for anybody who wants to teach blended courses. It's everything you want to know about blended learning but forgot to ask or were afraid to ask. Or blended learning, just add water. And it exists today, and this is what's in it. Best practices, strategies, these two course models that I mentioned, different course design principles. We've got the two prototype courses in composition and algebra. We've got all kinds of instructions on how you could apply the toolkit to create original blended courses, not in those two disciplines. Train the trainer materials that I mentioned, and then the assessment and data collection protocols. All of our survey instruments, the letters that we used for our IRB office are all out there for public consumption. And this is what it looks like, so that when you go there, as soon as the session is done, you will know you're in the right place. I will not bore you with kind of describing everything that's on all these pages, but when you get out there and you can kind of take a look, you'll see that it's a pretty rich environment, and it was built really with the intention of supporting the 20 schools that we were trying to encourage and help to develop blended courses. But what it's turned into is something much greater because it's persistent, and it's had a reach far beyond the 20 schools that we started working with. And in fact, I have heard from research institutions, community colleges, and even K-12 people who are not part of our grant who are now using this as a foundation for their own faculty development on their campuses. And I would love to hear it if others are doing the same. Okay, there it is, blendedlearningtoolkit.org. I don't see everybody writing. Why aren't you writing? This is the most important thing you're going to get from my presentation. blendedlearningtoolkit.org, tweet it. Post it on your Facebook. I will pause momentarily while everybody gets that. When you go there, it will redirect to a UCF site, so don't panic that you've been phished. But that was cheaper than buying a domain. So blendedlearningtoolkit.org. Included in that is, and I will I will say the obligatory mention of a MOOC for us for today, but it includes a MOOC. And we ran a MOOC last year to train all the faculty who were not being specifically trained in composition and algebra. And in fact, many of those same faculty also took this MOOC. It was a 5-week course on how to build blended courses. We just ran another one. It literally ended like a week ago. It started in September. But all the materials are out there and available to you right now. So you could go through this BlendKit course, and if you don't want to write down that URL, you can get to it from the Blended Learning Toolkit by going to Faculty Development and just clicking the link. This is kind of what it looks like. This is the schedule. All the archive materials are out there. All the readings, all the activities, all the peer review or self-assessment checklists, all the archives of the webinars, interviews with faculty who are actually teaching blended courses from institutions all over the country. We just ran it again. Last year we had about 200 participants, over half of which weren't part of our grant. And the session we just ran this past month, we had over 1,200 registered participants. So people are getting value out of this. And this was sort of the surprise of our project that this turned out to be so popular. All right, kind of wrapping up here. Here are our bottom line results of the project. We had 20 institutions in 11 states. We developed 79 unique blended courses. 131 faculty were involved. We had proposed that we would deliver 217 sections, plan for some attrition, and we actually delivered 217 sections. I'm as shocked by that as you are, and as I'm sure Carrie is. We reached 5,798 students, of which 2,669 were low income. 74% of the faculty indicated that they would most likely teach another blended course, and 60% of the students indicated that they were satisfied with their blended course. And I think under that 60%, like 25% were sort of like whatever, neutral. So with that, you can write down sort of my shameless plugs of ways to reach me. And again, blendedlearningtoolkit.org. If there's nothing else you remember from what Tom said today, please write that down. I think we have about 10 minutes for questions. Is that right? 15 minutes for questions, and I'm going to give Carrie an opportunity to steal her laptop because she's got to like run all the way across the entire conference center to get to another session. So thank you for moderating.
Well, thanks, Tom. Actually, I don't have to run just quite yet. But while everyone's generating their questions, there's a reason why I sort of planned this panel this way, because I think Alex does such a great job of selling blended learning, where it hits me in the heart as a way for it to be really flexible and really approachable and really accessible to students. And Tom really brings in the hard statistics that show us that not only is it a flexible, accessible way for students to learn, but that it's working and that students are performing just as well, if not better. And obviously two very different approaches to scale within a system and then within a large network of very different institutions. But with each of them, I know both of you have had to think about how do you provide PD to people at a distance? How do you support them? And I know you've talked quite a bit about the MOOC, but I wanted to ask Alex to talk a little bit about some of the PD that you've provided to people as part of the SUNY project.
Sure, I'd be happy to, and I think that's one of the things that the SUNY Learning Network is actually quite well known for, online faculty development and instructional design. And so one of the things that kind of drew me to this was that we have lots and lots of faculty. I think we've estimated that we've trained about 5,000 SUNY faculty to teach fully online, and so we weren't taking traditional faculty and moving them to blend. We were taking faculty already trained in online teaching and learning and having done so for quite some time at some of our the campuses that were participants in this or longtime participants in SLN, and so we were taking those faculty and taking them to blend. And so we didn't have to convince them that online is, you know, will work, and really what we could focus on was on effective pedagogical practices in a blended learning environment and how that's different from a fully online environment or a traditional classroom. And so we were able to, do professional development ourselves on some of that. We turned to the BlendKit. We also turned to the work at the University of Madison at Wisconsin, and their blended learning approaches, and brought people in to do presentation and work with the faculty. We also put them into cohorts from different institutions. So the business faculty, the campuses chose the business AAS degree, business administration AAS degree, to blend, and then we took those business faculty from one institution and from the other and paired them up with those at the other institution with similar courses in those degree programs, and had them work through common objectives, had them work through their assessments, had them work through their definition of mastery and deeper learning, and presented them with the information from the work from UCF and Wisconsin, and helped them understand open course courseware to reduce the cost of textbooks for students. We also introduced them to social media, the interventions that we used, and using social media in their courses, to the learning concierge, to all the interventions and concepts and roles that we had as components of this. And so we did a series of professional development events for them and for the supporting staff. And I think that, the participating campuses, the staff at the participating campuses would say that the professional development opportunities that they had were very rich and very good and very rewarding. I think the faculty would say that as well.
Thanks. So thanks for letting me steal that. Do we have other questions in the crowd? It's hard to see when you're under the lights up here, but if you want to raise your hand, we can bring you a microphone, or you can step to the microphones that are in the room. As this gentleman is gesturing, we have one here, and we have one here if you have any questions. You all look very comfortable, but it's a very short walk. Phone.
While people are thinking about it, they're overwhelmed by the number of questions that they have that they can't articulate one. One comment on to piggyback on what Alex said about having already online trained faculty. We didn't, as part of this project, while some schools had done some stuff online, like Troy University was one of our partners, and they've done a bunch online, but they're not doing anything blended. One of the things that we tried to instill in faculty through our professional development was that we learned this from our own faculty, that for blended learning, it really helps to think of it not as taking a face-to-face course and adding online elements to it, because you often end up with the course and a half kind of phenomenon, or you just sort of repeat things that you're doing in the classroom. But have faculty think about it as an online class that you're adding face-to-face components to. And that paradigm shift of how to approach it seemed to be really helpful for faculty in coming up with the right, what we call the mix map, of what you're going to do online, what you're going to do face-to-face, and how those two things articulate with each other. And in fact, we even have them create a mix map as part of our BlendKit MOOC.
Thank you. So I'll pause for a moment to see if anyone wants to come to the microphone. While you're all thinking, I actually have another question. One of the hard parts when you're thinking of scaling course transformation, I mean, both of you are enablers of this. You've created the structures that allow these multiple courses to happen. But there's also, it's hard because when you're working with especially as many courses as you are, how do you ensure that they all have the level of quality once they're implemented that you want? I'm not sure which person wants to go first.
Yeah, I think that the honest answer is that you don't know for sure. You hope, and you try to mitigate any risk as much as you can through upfront faculty development, process improvement, and support. But we did not go after the fact and approve institutions' courses. It was up to them to ensure the academic rigor of their own courses. What we tried to do is help them understand best practices, and if they were going to do this and they wanted to be successful, then it would behoove them to kind of follow what we were saying, because we had data to prove that it's been working. And generally, faculty want to do well, and so they're receptive to that. So for the most part, that seems to work. But I think that if we had the time and resources, it would be nice to do sort of a post-course review on all of them to do learning. And maybe some of these institutions are doing that just as part of the regular processes.
So we do have in the SUNY Learning Network for the participants in the SUNY Learning Network faculty development program, we do have rubrics that we use both formatively and summatively in terms of course review. So the faculty are given the rubrics as they're developing their courses, and then the instructional designers or whoever the powers that be are on their campus also can use those rubrics to do sort of an, you know, pre-flight check of the course and work with the faculty to make sure that you know, that everything is as it should be or as the instructor intends. And then part of our faculty development process involves continuous improvement, so it's understood as part of the culture that just because you've developed a course once doesn't mean it's perfect and that it can be continuously improved. And so we provide continuous opportunities for review and revision and improvement of courses for faculty who have taught before. And so we just extended that to the blended environment. If we had time and resources, and we will eventually, develop rubrics specifically for blended learning to facilitate the review of the courses and the formative development of courses, and then also, you know, continue that culture of continuous improvement, the understanding that, you know, things can always be improved. And you're always learning new things. You know, the field moves forward, and there's lots that gets, you know, better investigated, better understood, and so you can always improve.
Excellent.
I'm a graduate student at UCD, and I'm taking my master's. I've just finished my master's in instructional design. And one of the things that I found a bit, not disconcerting, but just a bit of an issue, and I wish you'd speak to it, is the ability of blended learning to add an interpersonal component that I kind of missed on my completely online courseware.
I think that Alex could probably, you know, concur with this, that what we have found is that I think, and it's reflected in the students' perception of instruction in the blended courses, that they prefer that modality because it affords them a lot of the conveniences of online learning, but also that kind of social interaction that a face-to-face course has. So, you know, they like that convenience of the online, but they sort of bemoan the lack of the social activity that a face-to-face environment gives you. And blended learning, if done well, can kind of bridge that gap. If not done well, then you risk building a course that uses the worst of both modalities, and that's why faculty development for us is so critical, because with the greatest reward comes the greatest risk of doing it poorly if you're not careful.
A little bit about you sort of built in some social aspects with SUNY Blend. Is that correct?
So maybe for the students?
Yeah. Yeah, so maybe talk a little bit about some of those aspects that you built in to bridge that.
I mean, we are the pedagogical model that from which we depart is, you know, the social construction of knowledge that people learn in a group, and translating that effectively to an online teaching and learning environment does not happen necessarily intuitively, which is why we have a very thoughtful, robust faculty development program for online and now blended faculty. With, you know, the understanding that it's not an e-reading course. It's not, you know, you're doing a sort of a souped-up correspondence course. You are actually in a learning environment with an instructor, with other students, and you are integrating, you are interacting to co-construct understanding with the facilitation of the instructor and with the other students in the class. And so we work very hard with faculty to help them understand the effective practices of how to do that in an online technology mediated environment, and to do that based on who they are as an instructor, what their discipline is, and how they want to present themselves. So it's not cookie cutter. It depends on who the instructor is, and done well. I mean, you know, we can't, It ultimately is up to the instructor. Like, we can't legislate, you know, excellent instruction. But we can certainly help faculty to understand how they can be more effective, more successful. And the same with students. We can support and scaffold them as well, and help them to have better chances of being successful and having better, richer experiences. And so, we know a lot today. That there are the meta-analyses that are out that show that that blended learning, for the reasons that Tom was talking about, because in the best of circumstances, you have the best of both worlds, and done well, can be very, very good experiences for both faculty and students. And so, to me, life, the answer to life, the universe, and everything is good instructional design and faculty support.
Well, thank you both. Yes, sir. Oh, 1 minute. Oh, excellent. Well, perfect timing. Well, thank you all very much for participating today. I do encourage you to look at the site. I know Alex has already uploaded some materials for our session listing, and we'll be adding others. And don't forget that URL that Tom told you to write down. But thank you all for participating, and thank you very much to Tom and to Alex for sharing about your programs today.
Thank you.